is in verse 16, and the verse is like this. The actions of the righteous are for life, and the results or the product of the wicked is for sin. What he means by sin, we're doing verse 16. The action of the righteous is for life, and the product or the results of the wicked are for sin. Meaning, sin here means failure or destruction. What is the activity of the righteous? What do righteous people do? What is the activity? The product, or what is the end result of the wicked? Making a comparison between the first half and the second half, the problem is, why does it speak about the actions of the righteous and the results of the wicked? Either let's deal with results or deal with actions. Why is it change in the middle? The actions of the righteous is for life. The question is it talking about the quality of life, or is it talking about the longevity of life? And how does the actions of the tzaddik relate to the life, or whatever life means? We're not sure yet, but however, we're going to have a relationship between his actions and life. The product lead to failure, okay? Is the action of the righteous, is it his intention for life? Result in life. Okay, I'll answer this question first, because this is the basic premise of Proverbs, okay? The basic premise of Proverbs is, let's say, for instance, there is a scientist. There was an experiment. The first experiment was people tried religion to change the world, to get their effects, right? They brought sacrifices, and they brought human sacrifices, and they gave gold to the gods and all these things. Of course, this experiment did not work. Later, the scientists came and analyzed the nature of the physical world, and then based on that, they did get their results. In other words, we have cars today, and we have conveniences, and we have better medicine today, and better cures, and all these things, the modern things that we have, the benefits of modern-day life, is because there was an investigation into the nature of the physical world. Okay? Now, the thing is that to be successful, when you analyze what is important, how to get to the physical world, there's two parts. There's the physical world, and then there's the human being, the nature of the human being. Now the problem with the human being, he makes mistakes because he has a side of him that he makes decisions based on his emotions, like greed and jealousy and stingy and greed, all these things. So the thing is that because of these decisions, so he's making a decision not in line with reality. Just like when a person worshiped these gods, so it's not in line with reality, it couldn't work. You see? So we say that if you're in line with reality, you will be successful, except in one area, where it's beyond your control. Okay? It's totally out of your control, or a possibility that's impossible for you to think of. But however, there will be, if you train your mind to think correctly, and if you undo all your emotions, then you will not make any mistakes. But the only mistakes is made by the incorrect decisions of the emotions. You see? So therefore, the thing, for that to happen, you know what I mean? There's a few people that made it. It seems like Jacob made it, like when he went down to Egypt, he was 127, okay? So he's on the level of Jacob, and at 127, he undid his last emotion, okay? But the thing is it's a rarity, but the only thing is, as we get closer to that, the chance of us making mistakes become less and less as we remove these possibilities. So therefore, when we say that his actions is to life, we don't mean his intent. We mean that if he lives correctly, then he will be totally successful. You see? Whether this verse in particular is talking about that at this point, I really don't know. It's possible that's the purpose of the verse. You see? But however, insofar as that question in general, that's the way we look at life. interpretation of the verse. I would say that is what the verse is talking about. In other words, the actions of the righteous is for life, because his actions are in line with reality. By life means he will be successful. He will have the good life. Okay? And the results of the wicked are for failure, because he's not living in line with reality. And that's really the basis of the book of Proverbs. For instance, a person wants to make a plan, or he's discussing what he should do, what college he should go to, or any type of thing that has to do with the future, right? Now, the only way to do it is, let's say, for instance, you would discuss it with somebody, and that person would ask you different questions. See, a question shows that the idea is not complete. Now, once you answer every single question from every different angle, you see, so then it says, well, according to rationale, that makes sense. Therefore, that is in line with reality. That is what we mean in line with reality. We sort out exactly the way we work on a verse. We ask all our questions, and then we see if all our questions are answered. Then we know that it's true, and that way you will be successful. That's how we know it's in line with reality. The only test, the Meiri medieval commentary says that the only test for truth is questions. If every single question, when you have the result and the result answers every single question, that's how you know you have the truth. You see? Now, once you do that, then you do it. If something goes wrong, then there's two possibilities. One is if it was something totally out of your ability to get the information, or to be aware of. So you didn't know to plan for that. Or you made a mistake, and there's one area that you didn't analyze that you could have analyzed, and therefore you failed. Those are the two possibilities if you fail. So whether life means longevity or whether it means quality, I would say it means both. Why? Because if you make any, first of all, there are a lot of things that cause you, see, a person's life, a quality of life that we could understand, okay? That if you make correct decisions and everything works out for you, you're definitely going to have a good quality where you don't have problems. But also longevity, because the thing is what takes away from longevity is really two things. One is you live incorrectly physically. Okay? Okay, but that most people are aware of, especially in modern society, even though there were societies that they didn't. So they lost out on longevity because they didn't analyze what is physically healthy. But in modern times, more or less, we have that idea. But what people don't realize is that conflict also takes away from life, you see. Certain conflicts, you see, when you're unhappy, the conflict draws, you know. You ever see, like, for instance, Carter, President Carter. You looked at him when he went into the presidency and when he left the presidency. You saw, like, in 4 years, the man became an old man, you know. Like, you see tension, unbelievable tension. Has its effect on the human being, you see? So the thing is that since the purpose of Torah is to remove conflict, so definitely it will also give you the longevity. Besides, it will teach you how to analyze the physical. I mean, a lot of people don't know how to make decisions. There's so many different approaches to health. What people have, what could they call health, that you don't know how to make a decision. Well, what the Torah will do, will train you how to analyze these things and how to make the decisions, so that you can be able to find the truth. So in these ways, the Torah gives you longevity. You see? Life means both, to be both the quality of life and the longevity of life. To live this way, at this point, you might start thinking this way in everyday life. But as you develop your thinking process through the study of Torah, we're starting in Mishlei and Proverbs, but I mean all areas of Torah work with the training, with thinking and working in thought. And as you develop, and we're also talking only about ethics at this point. So the thing is, in all aspects of ethics, as you start gaining knowledge, you start learning to think this way, and then you start creating your own methods of analysis. What I mean is, it's not creating something new, but the thing is that you know how to think. So when you come up in a certain situation where you don't have the principle, you start analyzing the situation the situation becomes like the verse. Just like you were trained in the verse to abstract the principle of the verse, so you will be trained to abstract what principle is operating here. How should I deal with this situation? And you will learn to abstract the principle of life. So there's a relationship. In other words, even analyzing the verse is a training in analyzing the problems of life. And once you get that method, with the help of all the principles that you already have from Proverbs, so after a while you will be able to think correctly, you see? But it's a matter of again and again, from all different angles in Proverbs, after a while it builds up, and then you learn other areas of Torah that deal with ethics, until after a while you see it from all different angles. Is that in the verse it says the product of the wicked is for sin. And we really changed it to failure, okay? And the question is, how did we go from sin to failure, okay? The reason why we did that is when we translated to failure, because if I left it sin, I was sure that the approach you would, in other words, you're going to look at it from a certain angle, you know, like sin has certain connotations. And so therefore I gave the interpretation to failure. But however, see, according to our definition now, insofar as ethics is concerned, sin is where I do an act which is irrational. An irrational act must lead to failure. Therefore, sin as a cause, insofar as ethics is concerned, is an irrational act. Sin used as a result would be failure. Because if you do an irrational act, the result must be failure. We do see people that live irrational lives, and yet they are successful. Okay, the thing is that many times when you look, sometimes, like for instance, person has certain symptoms, and we look at it and say, oh, that's not too bad. Doctor looks at it, rushes you to the hospital, right? Now, the thing is the same thing in the physical world. There's sometimes symptoms which you look at it as a success, but it really isn't, you see? I'll give you an illustration. Let's say, for instance, there's certain things that, first of all, there's success in the five senses. When we, in other words, that we cross the street, we realize it's dangerous, we look both ways. So people are, all people, unless the person is psychotic, but otherwise most people are successful on the physical level. Even the primitives that believed in all types of mystical things, right? But however, they knew they went hunting. The only thing is they depended on the hunting for their gods, but they did the right thing. You see, they had to do the correct action to actually come down with the completion of the hunt, to capture the animal or to get the animal, you see? So they had to do the correct act, even though they might have prayed to strange gods, you see? But as you start going in more into the subtlety of it, the way they're living their lives, these things are going to affect them. As we study Proverbs, we'll see more and more in what ways these things affect them and how it affects them. You see? But the thing is, yes, on the superficial level, you do see that people are successful, and it also depends on what society. For instance, in our society, we live in a scientific society. It's true that we don't study Proverbs, but they will be successful in finding the things, whatever they want to find from science. But as the society becomes corrupt, we're finding that even scientists are sometimes cheap just to get their result and just to get their honor. And so they write that they got something when really they didn't find any discovery, you see? And that's how things start failing, you see? As it continues, the corruption and the emotions. But the thing is, on a certain level, they can be successful. But on the long run, that's why he says that tevuah, the Hebrew tevuah, means the product. The product of the, in other words, right away, the wicked is successful on the short run. You see? See, like, so there was one general that says, why was Hitler successful with the Blitzkrieg? Because nobody ever expected such a thing. It was unexpected. He says, but it's not very difficult to break a blitzkrieg, and after a while they did, you see? But it's only because they didn't expect it at the beginning, you see? But slowly, you understand, then you could work it out. And therefore, a person should have to change his tactics, which Hitler couldn't. You see? So therefore, the thing is that there are many, many different things that the wicked can be successful on a short run. You must see how, on the short run, how it fits into reality. To be even successful, it must be some reality. He's doing something in reality. But the only thing is, what you don't notice is that the long run, as he's taking these steps and being successful, so he holds the way of his wickedness and those emotions are correct, and in the long run, that's where he will be destroyed. Look at the wicked, when they are successful, you should analyze what they did in line with reality to make them successful. Then at which point their emotions didn't allow them to look at reality correctly and work with a certain way that he's going to fail. There's a certain, in other words, like this. Take Hitler, okay? Now Hitler was successful. He worked in a certain way. He's politically correct. He worked it out politically and the politics, and he worked out the wars and everything like that, okay? But what happened in his first failure? His first failure was really in Russia, okay? Now it happened when he came into Russia, he had the Blitzkrieg, but however, he didn't capture. Now, the Blitzkrieg is moving very quickly, so he spread over a long parcel of land. Okay? So what happened is he did not capture all of Russia. In fact, he was within a few miles of Leningrad at that time, the capital, when the winter came in, the Russian winter, you see? And he was spread out over very, very, around 300 miles. And his general says, let's retreat 300 miles for the winter and consolidate. And then after the winter, if we protect ourselves over the winter and we stick it out during the winter, so then we could get back to 300 miles right after the winter in the spring, just go in and take over. But Hitler says, we will not give up one inch of German territory. You see?
Russian territory.
German. Now he called it German territory.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right, now the Russian territory was now German.
Oh, okay.
He says, I will not give up one inch of German territory.
Okay,
you see? So the thing is that he was spread over a long piece. So they brought in troops from Siberia who were dressed in white, white down, so you couldn't see them. And also they were warm while the Germans weren't. Their guns were oiled for that type of weather. And they just took them off piece by piece because they were spread out. And by the time the winter was over and the spring came, the Germans were already weakened already. And then the rest is history. You see? So the thing is that he did have a plan, you see? And he worked out, it was a good plan. But his emotions, see, the emotions, what happens is always the emotions get in line, getting there, and just, that's what happens to the wicked. See, that's how the wicked destroy themselves. Their emotions affect them. There are some wicked people that are not thinkers. We will talk about those people that are simply not thinkers. But however, there are many wicked people that are really thinkers, and they think things through. But however, it's when their emotions get involved there that... And also, you have to understand that sometimes the circumstances, like Hitler was in a circumstance, you see, there's outside circumstances, where what happened was is the other nations made terrible mistakes. See, the mistake was is that they made a mistake and they thought that if you satisfy evil for a little bit, that'll satisfy them, it'll go away. You see? But evil was never satisfied, and you got to stop him right away. So he was successful by virtue of the mistakes of the rest of the world. You see? Because the rest of the world just backed off. They say, okay, we'll give you that piece of land. Just leave us alone. We don't want to go into battle. But they don't realize that evil, you know what I mean? Once you back off from evil, evil feels successful. Success, then we move in. You see, then we continue. So therefore, he was successful for two reasons. One is a certain amount of thought, okay? And two, because the rest of the world was also making mistakes. And this is, in the beginning of the situation, their mistakes made them fail. As we look at the wicked person as a success, it's a big mistake. The success, if you look deep enough, is only a symptom that you don't really see. And you think, oh, wow, you'll only look at it superficially on the physical and the physical part, you see? But if you look underneath, you see failure is coming. Introduction. Sometimes you have a verse that deals with a particular case. Sometimes you have a verse that gives you an introduction to the whole picture of what's going on in Proverbs. looked at the verse, I really thought I'd give an introduction until we work it out. And then I realized this verse was the introduction. This verse, as we say, like this. The subject matter of the verse is actions. Okay? And there are two types of actions. There are thought-out actions, and there's ignorant actions, where you don't have all the facts, you don't have all the ideas, it wasn't thought out every single step. That's an ignorant action. So therefore, we say thought-out actions lead to success or to life, and the ignorant actions that the wicked will lead to failure. There's two ways of reading the verse. So what we're going to do is give both ways of reading it, and then we'll analyze each one separately. Okay? As the path to life is guarding Musa, comma, and he who leaves Musa will err, E-R-R. As a way of life. The either training your mind to see the correct view of life, or Musa is to investigate the emotions and see precisely how they make mistakes. That is Musa. Musa is the study of life. In other words, two things. One is how to get the correct views of life, or to deal with the emotions that don't allow you to see see the correct views, or to act upon the correct views. Then you deal with the emotions. That's Musa. That's all that is included in Musa. It says the path to life is guarding Musa, and he who leaves Musa will err. A is is guarding Musa and leaving false Musa. This word to err, it could be translated as either err or false. Try to compare the proverbs. Each proverb, even though they come from the same verse, should be analyzed totally separate as a separate entity. There were two different commentaries that understood the proverb differently, and each one will be analyzed in its own right. Okay, don't try and make any comparisons. What is the path to life? What he means by the path to life, he means the best possible life that the physical world has to offer. If you want the best possible life that the physical world has to offer, this is the verse for you. We're dealing with halacha, or Jewish law, and the answer is no. We are not dealing with law, we're dealing with practical, everyday life. It was created for the human being. In other words, the human being has free will to be guided either by his intellect or by his emotions. What I mean is not that you get rid of one or the other, but which one makes the decision in your life. For instance, emotions, you make decisions by jealousy, by vengeance, by greed. All these type of emotions tell you how to make decisions. Rationale will show how these decisions are irrational and lead to some type of destruction. Okay? So therefore, what the Musar is, it shows you, this verse will discuss a lot what Musar is, but it'll show you the best possible life and show you the incorrectness of the other type of life. Comparing Musar to Halacha would be comparing math to physics. They do have something in common. I mean, they have a point where they meet, but they are two different sciences. The same thing, Musa and Halacha definitely have some meeting point, but however, they are two different sciences and two different approaches. Between Musa and philosophy, I would say that this is Musa is ethical philosophy. It's a particular area. The ethical philosophers didn't have anything good to say. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But however, here in Torah, if you follow ethical philosophy of Torah or Musar, so then you will, then you have 3,000 generations of the greatest thinkers,
that are interpreting the word of God, you see. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they have every single angle covered. Yeah, it's hard to miss the real approach and what really ethics is in reality. Can't miss. 1,000 generations, 3,000 or 3,500 years. So what does it mean to err? What it means to err means that you will suffer the consequences of your actions. What we're doing is we're... In other words, most people know that... let's say, for instance, you go out without... in 20 degrees weather, you go out in a bathing suit, that you're going to pay the consequences. Or if you go out in the sun the first day of summer and you're light-skinned, you're going to pay the consequences. But most people look at jealousy and all these emotions as something bad. But they don't see it as really leading to consequences and harm. You see? That's what it means. It means if you leave Musa, if you don't accept Musa, then what's going to happen is you're going to live by your emotions and you will pay the consequences. Even so, and because you don't have the knowledge of Musa, many times you're paying consequences, you don't even realize that you are the cause. And that's when you start blaming other things around you. You don't even realize you're the cause. Halfway. Either you live the life or you don't live the life. But the only thing is that as you start living the life, you protect yourself from certain consequences, but where you haven't corrected your way of life, it is possible that you will suffer the consequences. And then missing out on the good life, you can have a life of consequences where your actions now could in 5-10 years affect you. You learn to make decisions. You're training yourself to make decisions in a certain way, right? You all your life, you train yourself. But in different situations, you react in a certain way. And when given the right situation, that reaction could be very harmful. But since you train yourself to react that way, let's say, for instance, you react every time something doesn't go your way, you get angry. Okay, so you have fights with your wife or this or that. But let's say one time you lose yourself and you beat up on your boss. You can go to prison, you lose your job. But you trained yourself to think that way and to react that way. It's going to come out in a situation where you're going to pay the consequences real big. And you don't raise them correctly, there's going to be problems later on. And you don't know why. You say, look, I did everything right. But if you really don't know all the areas of how to live correctly and how to make decisions, how to relate to people, how to relate to children, you definitely are going to make errors. And so therefore, there will be consequences. The point was, the question that was asked is, what does it mean to guard? Really should say to study Musa, not to guard Musa. Well, what is this guard Musa that you study? Let's say even halacha. So you study halacha and then you carry it out. You do the act. But in Musa, since we're dealing with deep emotions, emotions that we're not even aware of, we have to, and these emotions have ways of coming out in very tricky ways. And therefore, you have to be constantly on your guard to watch that even when you're thinking correctly, it could affect your thinking process. You know, without realizing, it affects how you make the decisions. And that's what it means to guard. In other words, it's not a matter of saying, I know I have to do this, A, B, but you're working out things in everyday life. And as you're thinking about it, your everyday life is your emotions are being wants to make the decision. You don't want it to. And so therefore it sneaks out. Through even your logical thought, it could sneak out and make these decisions and these patterns that you don't recognize, the way you operate and the way you make decisions, start sneaking out. Therefore you have to guard Musa. You have to be very, very careful to watch yourself every single time when you think it through and to think it through again and to test it out. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the greatest thinker in the past generation, said that a person should always discuss things with his rabbi. He says, what if you are the greatest thinker of the time, which he happened to have been? So he says, what should you do? You don't have anybody greater than you to think about, to talk it over. He says, talk it over with your students. Why? Because sometimes, if it's your emotion, you might be a very great thinker, but if it's your emotion, you're not going to notice it while somebody else will, even though he's not a greater thinker as you. So another person will notice it. So therefore, it's important to check it over with others and to talk over with other thinkers I'm talking about. If you talk it over with other thinkers. But that's what it means to guard. To guard means is that these emotions keep coming out. You don't even realize that you don't even realize you're totally living by them. You don't realize that. And you have to uncover these motives and how they work in you and how they operate, and to start dealing with them. Deal with it is be aware that there is a part of you that does this, and then to watch it and to start picking up and to noticing, to try and pick up on these ways that you react in different situations that you don't even notice. There's a lifetime process of undoing, you see? It's a lifetime process. Even while you're studying all the other subjects in Torah that are necessary, you must always be involved with this, unless you're like Moshe or Moses, that he undid all his emotions. And that was when he was... Yeah, Jacob undid his emotions when he went down to Egypt. The last emotion, when he was 127. So practically speaking, for us, it's a lifetime process of constantly being aware that these emotions are always at work and always, and this is what we mean by the evil inclination. You see, that's what we mean by the evil inclination. It's really, it's the part of us that we don't recognize. I'm trying to change the definition of evil. See, this is the problem, okay? For instance, when Jesus says, forgive them, Lord, because they do not know what they are doing. I don't know if I'm quoting correctly, but the thing is that we hold that ignorance, where you do not know, that's evil. It's not where an evil person says, there's nobody in this world says, I am jealous and therefore I'm going to buy a bigger house than him. Nobody said that. You ever hear a person say that everybody else knows they're buying it for jealousy except the person? They have all these rationalizations. I need a bigger house. I like my comfort. They have all these arguments. Recognize that everybody else does. Many times we have a sense of evil that, oh my God, I'm doing something evil. By us, evil must be defined clearly what makes it evil. Right? And insofar as ethics is concerned, I'm now only talking about one subject of Torah, the subject of ethics. Evil is because you are destroying your way of looking at life, because a person doesn't stay the same. He's constantly getting more, either he's going more in the direction of his emotions or more in directions of rationale. And he's destroying his view of life if he keeps going in the emotional way. And two, he will get the consequences of his actions. So therefore, that's what we mean by evil, insofar as ethics is concerned. We don't say jealousy is bad, like it's a catastrophe. It is a catastrophe, but it's not a mystical thing. That's what I'm getting at. It's not mystical. Most of the people hold somehow jealousy is bad. But we say it's not mystical, then it's not somehow. We will show you exactly how it is. And as we go through the different verses, we will show different things, how they exactly they are good and bad. In other words, if you do something wrong, you shouldn't condemn yourself like I'm terrible. The guilt feeling when you do something wrong should only force you to reanalyze and to check over and to think through what the mistake was and then to work and correct it. Guilt feeling and bad feelings in and of themselves is no benefit. It's only a benefit only if it helps you and it motivates you to get involved in the world of thought. So therefore, if you feel guilty about something, you shouldn't stay in that state, but you should say, just one minute, what did I do wrong? Let me analyze and let me see if I could find the source of what the error is and see if I could correct it. And let me define what the error is and why it is wrong and what makes it wrong. You see? These things must all be defined clearly to the mind. That is practically the cure. This recognition is the cure of undoing the evil inclination or our emotions making decisions for us. All of these things take constant review of these ideas and these verses. Constant review again and again until like you naturally start thinking this way. And then you can start guarding the emotions because you have the ideas. And these ideas are part of you, so you become very aware of them. View, and sometimes in the review you will find new questions. You must have every question answered. If there's any new question, write it down and it should be answered. If it's not clear to you, and then it can't operate. If it's not clear to your mind, then the idea is not operative. It will not operate within you. saying that the path to life is to guard Musar. So then what does it mean to leave Musar? It means even if you study it but you don't guard it, then you will make mistakes. Then the value of the value of Musar is lost even if you study it. You see? In other words, like this, if we're to define the verse, we would say the subject is Musar, or how a person should relate to Musa, right? And how people relate to Musa. You could either guard Musa. In other words, you have the study, and it's constantly being used in all your decisions, or you don't have it, meaning that you could have studied. If you didn't study Musa, then you don't have it. That's it. But even if you studied Musa, but if you don't guard it, then you don't have it, and it will be lost. Science of mathematics, where you just study math. You just have the ideas of math. It must be constantly guarded to make sure, and every time you're making decisions and thinking through, it must be guarded to make sure it's a rational decision and you protect yourself from all the possible consequences. The second way we interpret this part of this verse, and we're saying the path to life is, what is the path to life? Guarding Musar and leaving false Musar. Of a false Musar, isn't that an oxymoron? The first way we interpreted the verse was how you relate to Musar. The second proverb is really saying, what is the subject of Musar? What is the subject of Musar? The subject of Musar is two things. One is there are many, many people that tell you how to live. See, Musar is ethical philosophy where they tell you how to live. And if you read magazines, there are plenty of people that want to tell you how to what they do and how you should do things, and they tell you how to live, and they're psychiatrists, and they have actors and actresses, and all different people want to tell you how to live, you see. Now, it's not enough just to know correct Musar, but you must also know why these are false, because these are the type of things that are going to affect you. And the thing is that you must have both. In other words, you must have the ability. The subject of Musa is not one-sided. It is knowing the correct idea and knowing the false idea and knowing why it is false. And if you notice, all of Proverbs, all of Mishlei, is set up that way. They have the correct view of life and the incorrect view of life. Mm-hmm. You see? And then we discuss why the incorrect view of life is incorrect and what harms you will get from it and what's the benefit of the correct. Because you must have that comparison, and you must see. And if you see, also, even in the guarding of Musa, if you recognize a fault, what's wrong, then you could look into your own emotions to recognize if you have it. But if you don't know if a thing is a fault, you don't know why it's a fault, you don't even know, you won't even recognize it if you're doing it. You won't recognize that area. What we're doing is opening up, what Mishlei is doing is opening up all areas that you didn't even realize was right or wrong. And certain things that you thought was right, you're going to find out is wrong. Certain things that you find out was wrong is really right. So the thing is that you must know both sides. Because if you don't know what's wrong, you don't know how to protect yourself. So therefore, what he's saying is the subject of Musar is you must know a correct way of life and the incorrect way of life. The incorrect way is incorrect. So that helps you deal with the emotion too. Because once logically you see it's incorrect, so then naturally you will turn away from it because nobody wants to harm themselves. Of interpreting this verse is the question is, the first way is how should you relate to Musar, namely by guarding it, or is the subject, what is the subject of Musar? What is the subject? What do you deal with? What are the objects that you deal with in this subject? And namely, you deal with two objects, the correct view and the incorrect view. In other words, let's say I'm studying mathematics. I only have to have the correct proof. I don't care if I did 20 incorrect proofs, it won't affect me. But I must know the incorrect desires, because I might have it, I might not be even aware that I have it. And I might not even be aware that it exists in me. So therefore I must know about this to be aware of it, to be able to guard it. What it means to guard yourself, okay? And we want a little clarification on guarding, what it means by guarding Musa, right? Now, the thing is that in life, In everyday life, we find that people act according to their emotions. They make decisions based on different emotions and sometimes even unconscious emotions, emotions that we're not aware of. And there's things that we say and do that just come out just by virtue of the natural human being. So things come, either actions or statements come out because of the unconscious. Now, therefore, we have to constantly be aware of what we're doing. Insofar as the science is concerned, you study the science, you define it, you clarify it until the mind sees it clearly, then you're finished. But insofar as Musa is, after you study the science, then you have to watch yourself, how you operate to make sure these things, these unconscious things don't come out in your actions and in the way you think, how it affects your thinking. You have to be aware of all these aspects of yourself. That's what it means, guard. Because it's constantly there, and therefore you have to constantly guard it. 18, and verse 18 says, he who covers hatred is lying lips, and he who brings out false his anger is a fool. So in this verse, either you're a fool or you're lying lips. That's your choice. So what does it mean to hide hatred? Lying lips. Your anger. I want to say that the subject of the verse is anger. Okay? And so therefore, if the verse is anger, then we have to know the two ways that the people, that these people are dealing with anger. There's one called a lying lips and one is a fool. What's the difference? Seems like there's two ways of having an outlet for anger, and we want to know what's the difference. He is of the first half, where he hides anger, is that it's lying lips, because even though he talks nicely to the other person, so then the but he really doesn't mean it. He's really lying to him because in actuality he's harboring hatred within him. And he's only talking nicely to him on the outside for social reasons. Is that your possibility? Right? Okay. The thing is, if a person actually did that only for nice reasons, that person would be a fool. Because the guy is living a life of suffering. He has anger, and he has no outlet for that anger, and he's acting nice to you, which is causing more anger, which the anger build up, the guy would totally suffer. That he wouldn't call lying lips. I assume he would call him a fool. Because the guy, that's a real, he's just suffering, nobody else is suffering except him. So therefore, that would be a fool. Second possibility, that he's lying so that he should act nice to you, so that he should take vengeance for this real harm that you did, or fake harm, whichever it is. But the thing is the hatred brings out vengeance, and what the lying lips are, is he's covering it up until he could take his vengeance. That would be the first half. Verse is talking about, Doug is right, that the second half of the verse is talking about that the person brings out his anger means that he explodes, he gets angry, and he screams and yells at you. Why is he a fool? Fool is because now the other person knows to be wary and to be careful of this person, because now he knows he's an enemy. So therefore he should be careful of the person once he knows he's an enemy. I don't know to be careful of a person who I don't know is an enemy. And I'm not aware that I have to be careful. But however, a person that is angry with me and shows his anger, so then I know to protect myself, and the person could never harm me. So you can never have an outlet for his anger. In other words, a person that doesn't show his anger, the first possibility which we rejected, is a person in conflict. The person that is angry and just gets his anger off, just to get it off, so he got his anger off, but however, now he forewarns the other person to be careful of him. The third person stops to realize that if he shows that the guy will be aware of him, that he's angry with him, so he covers up his anger, and he talks to him nicely until he gets his moment for vengeance. About a practical, very practical consequences. I understand there are other connotations that a person screams and yells, and all the things of evil that we talk about throughout Mishlei, we always mention, we always show the consequences. What we're showing here is that there are two ways for an enemy to react to you. somebody that hates you, to react to you. And therefore, the intelligent person will know how to deal with the second half. But however, the first half, even the intelligent person will not know that he's dealing with an enemy, and so therefore, that's why we call it lying lips. In other words, his consequences will be from other verses in Mishlei, which we've discussed, or in different times, the consequences of evil in general, and he will get the consequences of evil. But in the practical situation, it could be that he could hurt you because you're unprepared for it. But however, if a person shows his anger that he's upset with you, so then you can protect yourself. So this advice is to the intelligent person, not how to deal with his own anger and what the harm of your own anger is, but however, the two types of expressions of anger and how to protect yourself against them. Difficulty of protecting yourself against an intelligent, evil person, the difficulties of that. For a clarification on that verse, okay? The first person is harmful to others because he contains his anger. And therefore he uses thought, he thinks it out, how the best way to get even to the other person. That's the first one. Okay? That's the way he operates. The second person is a fool because he's harmful to himself. Why? Because he doesn't contain his anger, he immediately shows his anger. And therefore, the other person recognizes it, and there's no thought at all. It's immediate expression for his anger, and therefore the other one is protected. Now, as a corollary to this, we want to show that the only possibility for success is where you use thought or wisdom. Now, here's an evil person, and the first half of the verse is talking about an evil person, and he uses thought to be successful. And you see, insofar as he thinks things through, he is successful. Insofar as he's a liar, then there are other verses to show his downfall and how, in actuality, he will destroy himself. But on the short run, we see that the evil person that thinks will be more successful than the evil person that doesn't think. And that it becomes a proof to show that success is only through thought. And of course, the person that realizes that will stop and think about evil itself and realize the destruction of evil, so then he would never harbor the hatred, or if he would, he definitely won't have an outlet for it. He'll see that it's evil and he'll protect himself against doing evil because he'll see the destruction in himself. That would be the final, that would be the ultimate wisdom. But however, if you have a little bit of wisdom, then you can be partially successful in your evil. In fact, I would say the only way you can be successful in your evil is only through thought. This would be, therefore, it is dangerous to try to teach an evil person knowledge, because it will only help him in his evil. 19. With many or a lot of words, you will not stop from sinning. And he who controls his lips is a thinker. A lot of words. You could say a lot of words there. He wouldn't tell you that that's going to cause sin if you're talking in Torah, right? On the contrary, you know, so it doesn't mean a lot of words. Mm-hmm. Sinning. I mean, you do anything, or is it a particular type of thing? In other words, do you have a particular type of sinning in mind? The expression, a lot of words, you will not stop from sinning. It should just say, with a lot of words, you will sin. What does it mean, with a lot of words, you will not stop from sinning? What does it mean to control your lips? Thinker, insofar as controlling his lips are concerned, you don't have to be a thinker to control your lips. A person that covers hatred is lying lips, which means that he controls what he really feels, right? And now we're saying the same thing about a thinker, that he controls his lips. What is the difference between the control of a thinker and the control of the lying lips? Of verse 18. is that insofar as a thinker is concerned, he thinks about, at least he thinks about his thoughts. That was the first possibility. He thinks about his thoughts. Okay, it just doesn't just come out. But the thing is, that doesn't help us much if I don't have a guide what to think. Just to think about what I'm saying, I mean, I can become neurotic that way, constantly watching myself, everything I say. Unless I have some type of a guide, what we're talking about, what am I watching for? It's not just watching, you see, it has to be a guide. What's the guide, you see? If the verse doesn't tell me the guide, then it doesn't help me much. What does it mean by a lot of words? What type of a sin would a person commit by speaking a lot of words? How does a lot of words, how does the quantity of words make a person sin? Thinks, you say, he thinks in a certain way, that which is, and he has an idea, so he tells over that the idea. Now, the thing is that there's a certain amount that is necessary to get the idea across. Now, once you start speaking more than that, right, so then the question is where is that coming from? If it's not rational to talk that. If it's not rational for the extra, where is it coming from? You say, therefore it must be coming from the unconscious part of the human being. You say, see, a lot of people just like to talk. See, if you're talking about a person, there's two types of talk. There's some people that just like to talk. Even if they're not talking Lashon Hara or any other the type of things that are sinning, that you're not allowed to talk. Okay? But however, if a person just rambles on, a person rambles on from, it must be from his unconscious. So therefore, if it's from his unconscious, then it's impossible that there shouldn't be something come out. You see, in other words, that's why I think it says that he doesn't stop from sinning. He didn't say sinning. Why? Because his intention is not to sin. He's not going at, he's watching himself, he's not talking gossip, he's not talking lies, he's not exaggerating, he's not, none of these things, okay? But if he's just rambling on, even though his intention is not to sin, it is impossible not to. Why? Because the thing is that once you allow the unconscious its freedom, then it will just, then that is the area of sin. Like I said, you say, a person is born wild. A person is born with the emotions are evil, basically, and it is the mind that has to recognize and to define what is good and what is not. Attention to sin, you see? But let's say I'm just rambling on. I just feel like talking. I'm not doing anything wrong. But since I am rambling and my mind is not dictating what to say, so the information that is coming must be, or the cause of the things that I'm talking about must be my unconscious, my emotions. Once it's stemming from there, then it's impossible that I'm not going to say the correct thing. I have to say the incorrect thing. Something will come out wrong. Even if it's in the study of Torah. I'm studying Torah, and then I just have to clarify for the audience what is correct. But if I start rambling on about the information beyond which the student needs, so then the question is, why should I talk about, why should I continue on? There's no more clarification, why should I continue on? Therefore, I'm being dictated not by my mind what is rationally necessary, but I'm being dictated by an emotion. Once I'm dictated by the emotion, that's where the danger comes. Whenever the emotion has control, then it's impossible not to sin. It's going to come out. You see? Sure of that sin. Okay. See, what happens is that... let's put it this way. You ever notice somebody starts with a joke? If you're in a group of people, somebody cracks a joke, like... And everybody just naturally, you know, gets in the mood for joking. Naturally, it's going to come to a dirty joke. Right? It doesn't stop. Once you allow your emotions to go, it always goes too far. You see what I mean? If you're just talking about people, just talking, suddenly you're gossiping. It's the most natural thing in the world. Because this is the desire of the emotion. The specific sin which you're going to talk about, that we're not, we don't know. But as long as you have an opening, allow the emotions freedom, and especially by talk, usually by an action, the person feels, a person feels by an action, that an action he know how to do. You know, I can't punch you in the face. There's a control there. But by speaking, there's no guard. Like, what's the difference? What am I saying? I'm just saying words. Before I'm saying words, and now I'm saying words. What's the big deal? I'm not doing anything. People usually don't think they're doing anything with words. You see? My friend Shmuley one time told me, he says, you notice that a person always stops for a full stop or a red light. He says, but when he's traveling, he naturally will go above the speed limit. He says, what's the difference? Because one is a qualitative difference. I'm stopped, then I'm going. That's a qualitative difference. Then a person will make a mistake. But when there's a quantity, whether I'm going 35 or 40, that, you know, I mean, it's only a quantity. People don't make distinctions in quantity. Now, talking, people just look at talk as, you know, there's nothing wrong in talking. What did I do? I'm only talking. I didn't mean it, you know what I mean? I'm only talking. An act, that's something else. An act is a qualitative thing where you could see you're doing harm to a person. But in a speech, people don't look at it that way. And once they allow it, then it just keeps coming and coming. Salesmen, they always tell a salesman, once you make the sale, stop. Don't talk, because you can only talk yourself out of it. You see, a wise person knows what is necessary to say, whatever subject it is, whether it's business, Torah, discussion, there's always, he knows when he got his point. Now, if there's a question, so then he'll deal with the question, but he'll only deal exactly with the point that is necessary. He just doesn't ramble on just to hear himself speak, but he has a definite clear-cut goal in mind what there is to say. And once he says it, then that's it. You see? In 18, we're dealing with anger. Anger. And there's two ways to deal with anger. Either you can control it, and, you know, like we spoke about last week on the tape. Over here, we're talking about talking. Not anger. I'm just talking. Okay? Now, the thing is when there's talking without a purpose, without a guide, that's the first half of the verse. You see, there's no guide. Second half is talking that there's always a purpose. It's always thought out, what is my purpose for saying anything? You see, whenever there's speech, you see, the subject over here is speech. But the question is there's two ways of speaking. Either I just speak without any purpose, without any plan, without anything. Or there is a purpose. What is my purpose? Once I reach that purpose, then there's nothing more to say. You see? So therefore, that's the subject. The subject is the speech. And the two sides is guided or unguided. Way of explaining the thinker is via purpose. Because once you have a purpose, so then you know when your purpose is fulfilled, then you can fulfill it. It's clear to the mind when your purpose is fulfilled. But if you have no purpose for speaking, and you're just talking, see, then there's room, always room for the unconscious to come out and go too far. That's what I'm saying. In other words, you could manage, you know, for a short time. But once you allow it without a guide, without control, it's going to go too far. Is pure still